Akatra Foundation presents the Akatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Welcome back to the Akatra Dialogue. Today, we're diving deep into a figure who was absolutely central to the American founding, but maybe doesn't always get the same spotlight as, say, Washington or Jefferson.
Right.
We're talking about John Adams, the second U.S. president, a real driving force behind independence.
Absolutely. Indispensable, really.
And our guide for this exploration is David McCullough's fantastic biography, the Pulitzer Prize winner, John Adams. It came out back in 2001.
And McCullough does such an amazing job. It feels like he's bringing Adams back to life, especially using those incredible letters between John and Abigail.
Exactly. So our mission today is to pull him out of those footnotes, look at his achievements, his complexities, and figure out why his story still matters so much to us now.
Yeah, because it's more than just a presidential biography, isn't it? McCullough paints this picture of a deeply human person.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant, incredibly principled, but also, surprisingly, kind of insecure.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah, and his life really speaks to this idea that maybe character is what truly underpins a republic. You kind of need to get Adams to get early America.
Okay, so let's start at the beginning then. Before the Revolution, before the presidency, who was this John Adams? Where did he come from?
Well, he wasn't born into the Virginia planter aristocracy, that's for sure. He was born October 30, 1735, Braintree, Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty humble New England roots.
Son of a farmer.
Son of a deacon and a farmer, yeah. And that background really instilled those, you know, classic Puritan values in him. We're talking discipline, duty, hard work, thrift. It wasn't just talk. It was how he was raised.
And I love that story about his father making him work the fields to appreciate education. It shows a certain insight from his dad, right? Pushing him towards learning.
Oh, completely. That was apparently quite pivotal. And then he gets to Harvard in the 1750s. And that just opens up this whole new world for him. You know, Enlightenment ideas, classical thinkers.
Right.
And deciding to go into law instead of the ministry like everyone expected. That was a big deal. His first real act of, let's say, self-definition. It put him squarely on the path to public life.
And you see that drive early on in his law career. He wrote about his passion for distinction in his diaries. But it wasn't simple ambition, was it? It seems mixed with a lot of anxiety, self-doubt.
Exactly. He documented it all, that intense desire for recognition, but always wrestling with his own conscience, his own sense of justice. It's fascinating to read.
And then comes Abigail.
Ah, Abigail Smith. They married in 1764. And McCullough makes it so clear she wasn't just a wife. She was his absolute intellectual partner.
His sounding board.
Totally. His advisor, his anchor. Those thousands of letters they exchanged, they are just incredible. You can't understand John without understanding Abigail and that partnership.
Yeah.
It's fundamental.
So he's this principled, maybe slightly prickly lawyer. How does he become this Atlas of Independence, as they called him?
Well, it starts with him finding his voice against British policies, writing powerful arguments against things like the Stamp Act. He starts making a name for himself.
But the big turning point, the really defining moment, seems to be the Boston Massacre defense in 1770.
Oh, absolutely crucial.
Remind us, British soldiers fire into a crowd, kill several Bostonians. The city is absolutely furious.
Like, it's a powder keg. And what does Adams do? He agrees to defend the soldiers.
Unbelievable. I mean, the risk to his reputation, his safety.
Everything. He put everything on the line. But for him, it was about a core belief. The rule of law had to stand, even when it was unpopular. Especially when it was unpopular. It showed incredible courage and, frankly, cemented his reputation for integrity, even among his opponents eventually.
That act really seemed to set the stage for his role in the Continental Congress. McCullough paints him as this tireless advocate, constantly pushing, arguing for independence.
Relentless is the word. Maybe not the guy who wrote the Declaration, that was Jefferson, but Adams was the engine driving the Congress towards that break. He made it feel inevitable.
And his work didn't stop there. Those diplomatic missions in Europe sound incredibly difficult.
Grueling. Trying to get loans in the Netherlands, negotiating peace with Britain alongside Franklin and Jefferson in Paris. He wasn't always the easiest diplomat, apparently clashed a bit with Franklin's style.
I can imagine.
But his persistence, that sort of bulldog tenacity, was vital. He got the job done.
Then comes the vice presidency under Washington, which he famously found less than thrilling.
The most insignificant office, yeah. Doesn't sound like him, does it? He needed to be in the thick of things.
And then his own presidency, 1796 to 1800. dominated by that conflict, or near conflict, with France, the quasi-war.
A really turbulent time. And maybe his finest hour, according to McCullough, was navigating that crisis.
Let's talk about that. The pressure to go to full-scale war with France must have been immense, especially from his own party, the Federalists, and Hamilton.
Huge pressure. Hamilton was actively pushing for war. But Adams, he saw how fragile the new nation still was.
Right.
And he made this incredibly brave call to send a peace mission instead. It was political suicide. It split his party wide open, pretty much guaranteed he wouldn't be reelected in 1800.
But it worked. It averted war.
It absolutely worked. It saved the country from a potentially disastrous conflict. And Adams knew the cost, but he did it anyway. He even said he wanted his epitaph to read, "Here lies John Adams, who took upon himself the responsibility of the peace with France in the year 1800.
Wow. That's putting country over party over self.
And McCullough really gets into the why behind these decisions. Adams's actions stem from a very specific worldview, a philosophy.
Which was different from Jefferson's optimism, right? More skeptical.
Much more skeptical about human nature. He didn't think people were inherently angelic. He believed we're driven by passions, self-interest, ambition.
He ends a bit grim.
Well, maybe realistic. And because of that, he believed passionately in a balanced government. Checks and balances weren't just theory for him. They were essential protection against those human flaws.
So separation of powers, different branches.
Exactly. Mixing elements of monarchy, aristocracy, democracy, all checking each other. He feared tyranny from a king, sure, but also tyranny from an unchecked majority, a mob. His work on the Massachusetts Constitution in 1780 is the prime example. It was a blueprint, really.
So this complex philosophy fueled his actions. But what about his personal motivations? That passion for distinction versus his sense of duty? How did those fit together?
It's a great question. I think they were intertwined. Yes, he craved recognition, a lasting legacy. But his Puritan upbringing gave him this powerful sense of duty that compelled him to serve. Even when it was thankless or cost him personally. It wasn't one or the other. It was both driving him.
And when things got tough, he didn't just quietly endure.
Oh, no. He fought back with righteous anger, with intellectual force, with sheer persistence. He wasn't stoic. He was a fighter. And through it all, you have Abigail.
Always Abigail.
Her letters were his lifeline, providing encouragement, sharp advice, just being there in his moments of doubt, which he definitely had. She was his rock.
It really highlights the importance of those key relationships. Abigail, obviously central. Then Jefferson, that complicated arc from friends to enemies to friends again.
An incredible story in itself. Allies in the Revolution, then bitter rivals in the 1790s and 1800 election, and then that remarkable reconciliation in retirement through letters. A dialogue for the ages.
And on the other side, Hamilton. Just pure political antagonism.
Pretty much. They represented fundamentally different visions for the country. Their clashes define the Federalist Party's internal struggles and really Adams's presidency.
Okay, so a man of principle, but definitely not perfect. McCullough doesn't shy away from the challenges and controversies, does he?
Not at all. Adams could be his own worst enemy sometimes. That irascible, obstinate temperament people talked about, his vanity. He hated political parties, but his presidency got tangled right up in them. And he always felt, you know, kind of overshadowed by Washington and Jefferson.
And the big controversy, the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798. That's a tough one to swear with his belief in liberty.
It really is. Passed during that quasi-war panic, they restricted immigration and made it a crime to criticize the government.
Which sounds pretty bad.
It was. McCullough gives the context real fear of war, French plots, internal dissent, but he doesn't excuse it. For Adams, the lawyer, the revolutionary, it was a major contradiction. His opponents rightly called it political oppression. It's a definite stain on his record.
And then came the election of 1800, losing to Jefferson, becoming the first one-term president. That must have stung.
Oh, deeply. And the whole midnight appointments controversy in his last days didn't help his exit.
But he didn't just fade away after that defeat, did he?
No, quite the opposite. He goes back to his farm, Peacefield, and enters this phase of incredible intellectual activity, writing, reading, and crucially, restarting his correspondence with Jefferson in 1812.
That reconciliation.
It's amazing. 14 years of letters, debating everything, politics, philosophy, religion, life. They hash it all out, rebuilding the respect and friendship. It's one of the great dialogues in American history.
And he lived to see his son, John Quincy, become president.
Incredible. And then the end. Dying on July 4th, 1826. the 50th anniversary of the Declaration.
Just hours after Jefferson died.
Unbelievable timing. And those reported last words, Thomas Jefferson survives, mm-hmm. not knowing Jefferson had already passed. It's almost too poetic.
So when you put it all together, what's the lasting impact? What's Adams's true legacy?
Well, professionally, it's significant. He's considered the father of the U.S. Navy. His work on the Massachusetts Constitution shaped American ideas of balanced government. Appointing John Marshall as Chief Justice was hugely consequential.
Right. Marshall shaped the court for decades.
Exactly. And that peace with France, averting a potentially crippling war,
yeah.
that's a massive legacy of statesmanship.
And beyond the specific acts, what about culturally, societally?
I think his life makes a powerful case for principled leadership, even when it's unpopular. He represents the idea of the statesman who thinks long-term versus the politician chasing popularity. And his willingness to step down after losing the election was crucial for establishing the peaceful transfer of power.
A cornerstone of democracy.
Absolutely. And just on a human level.
Mm.
A life poured into public service, an amazing partnership with Abigail, and the example of someone deeply flawed, yes, but ultimately driven by integrity for the good of the country.
Okay, so let's distill this down. After immersing ourselves in Adams's world through McCullough's eyes, what are key takeaways for you, the listener?
Let's try three. First, an emotional insight. You know, at the absolute core of this grand national drama, there's this incredibly moving, quiet love story. That partnership between John and Abigail, it wasn't just support, it was the source of his public strength. Their letters show this constant exchange, this mutual reliance across decades of turmoil. To really get Adams's resilience, you have to understand that private source, a true marriage of equals.
That's powerful. Okay, what about intellectually?
An intellectual insight. Adams wasn't selling sunshine and optimism. His belief in balanced government came directly from his skepticism about human nature. He thought people were flawed, driven by passion. So checks and balances weren't just a nice idea. They were a necessary cage to contain those impulses. He feared the power of one, but also the power of the crowd. Liberty, for him, needed structure, reason, law, not just good intentions.
A very sober, practical view of governance. And finally, a universal life lesson. Think back to that Boston Massacre trial. Before he was famous, he took that case. Defending hated soldiers? Why? Because of a core principle. The law applies to everyone or it's meaningless. It cost him dearly at the time, but it defined him. His life really shows that integrity isn't about easy choices. It's about being willing to pay the price for your principles. That's how you build something that actually lasts. And that really makes you think, doesn't it? In our own polarized times, with so much focus on charisma, how do you balance principle and popularity? What kind of character do you think is truly essential for leadership now?
It's a heavy question. Adams's life is definitely a reminder of the personal cost involved in building and maintaining democratic institutions. And maybe that true leadership sometimes means having the guts to do what's right for the long haul, even if nobody thanks you for it at the time. Something to chew on. Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive into John Adams. If this sparked your interest, definitely check out the Adams Jefferson Letters or My Dearest Friend, Letters of Abigail and John Adams. Reading their own words is an incredible experience. We hope you'll join us next time. Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ecaltra Foundation.